Okay. Boker Tov, ladies. We will continue a little with our discussion into some of the deeper dimensions of working with the letters of the alphabet. Last week, I mentioned to you an approach or methodological approach of looking at the letters called a milui. A milui was kind of like an expansion of letters when you're trying to uncover deeper dimensions within the actual alphabet itself. And we sent I sent a diagram over to you to show you what it would look like. You can sort of scroll back up to the WhatsApp diagram that I sent you, and you'll see there how the concept of milui or the expansion allows you to take a letter. We gave the example of an aleph, and when you work with that aleph, you can see that aleph, for example, in its most contracted form, is what we have as a single letter. And then if you expand that, you work with what they call the milui. You take the actual word aleph and you spell it out in a three-letter form, aleph, lamed, pei. You then take the aleph, lamed, pei, and you expand it even further, where each one of those three letters, aleph, lamed, pei, can be spelled out again, each word as a three-letter word. So it goes from one actual letter to a word of three letters to three words of each of those letters. Aleph, aleph, lamed, pei, lamed, lamed, mem, daled, and then pei. Hey, hey. And then you just expand it even further, where you've got Aleph Lamed Pei, and then Lamed Mem Daled Pei Hey. So the Aleph is like, Aleph Lamed Pei would be Aleph, but spelt out as in words. Lamed would be spelt Lamed Mem Daled, full out in its letters, and Pei Pei Hey. So you can see in that diagram there. That if you take the letters, you can kind of like work it with as a code to uncover deeper messages that exist within one particular letter. One letter can expand to an entire paragraph, if you will, if you just keep on expanding the letters further and further. So this gives you a kind of an insight into how, if you wanted to, you could work with the letters of the alphabet to uncover deeper dimensions within the actual words of specifically our Torah in order to appreciate some of the messages therein. So I want to give you an example as to how this exercise can be used to understand a particular discussion that you can find in the writings of the Gaon of Vilna on this last parasha, Parashat Vayakhel, that we read. He doesn't necessarily write it as part of Parashat Vayakhel, but what he says can be used to explain, I believe, something that is that occurs in our Sedra. Now, I'll just describe it to you, give you a bit of background, what we're going to have a look at. The interesting vessel that was highlighted at the end of Parashat Vayakhel in Shul on Shabbos was what we call a kior. A kior is a wash basin. The kior stood at the entrance to the Beit HaMikdash, and it was there that Kohanim would walk up to this kior and wash their hands and feet before assuming the avodah in the actual Beit HaMikdash itself. And the parasha describes how this kior was made out of copper, but specifically it was copper donated by the woman. They used to use the copper in those days as mirrors, and so women would use the mirror, that would be their mirror, and those copper mirrors were donated to the Mishkan, and the vessel, the kior, was fashioned out of those particular mirrors. Now, when you look at the nature of those mirrors, The Midrash tells you that Moshe Rabbeinu at first was a little bit wary of whether such an item should be used in the Beit HaMikdash. Hashem encouraged him, saying that if it wasn't for the motivation of women motivating all of us to have children, despite the difficult times that they were living in Mitzrayim, we wouldn't have achieved anything. And therefore, Hashem wanted to celebrate that and took that donation of the woman and turned it into a kiyor. Now, one can just look at the kiyor and suggest that there may be there's another function for it as well. And quite possibly, the idea behind it is that it was attached to a type of a pump, a water source, and the taps and the kiyor, were able to let in water and allow Kohanim to wash their hands. And in many, many shuls all over Israel, they kind of have a replica of this, not in copper, but they have it in, as a wash basin, and Kohanim go there. Many shuls have it in the shape of a kind of a kiyor. But the idea behind it was is that Kohanim should elevate their focus, purify their hands and feet, and they should do this specifically before going into the Beit HaMikdash to perform the Avodah. Now, a significant message that is important for Kohanim, that is that a Kohen could think that he's been given this unique level of sanctity of Kedusha, and that's really what allows him to be the conduit of blessing from Hashem to the people. What's vitally important is that the Kohen keep on focusing on the fact that it's not our personal level of sanctity as a person that makes us more worthy than anyone else, to be a Kohen and an emissary of Hashem to do the Avodah. It's kind of like a divinely ordained, it's a mazel of sorts. We were born with a kind of a Kohen gene, and it's a gift from Hashem. And we've got to learn to remove ourselves as much as we could from the equation, that none of our personal bias gets in the way. What comes from Hashem goes through us, and it comes to Am Yisrael. Hashem is giving the bracha; we just the vehicle through which it travels. The Kohen has got to remove his personal bias from the equation and allow the bracha to flow to the people. It's for this reason that one could explain that when we make the bracha to bless the people, we ended off by saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sanctified the Kohanim with the Kedushah of Aaron and commanded us to bless the people of Israel be'ahava, with love. There's kind of an emotion there attached to the actual bracha. We don't have any other brachas where that is actually where you find that precedent. But what it really means is that it's important that we recognize that it's not our personal feelings that are supposed to be there. It's really kind of an altruistic approach to giving a bracha to Am Yisrael. And quite possibly this is what takes place in the Mikdash on an everyday level. Whenever you're offering up a korban, a sacrifice on behalf of people, you realize that yes, they need you to help them do it, but in principle, it's a gift from Hashem that you are in that position to do that. Now, put that idea aside for a second, and when we work with this idea a little bit, it applies all over the place. That one should, so to speak, have a sense of integrity. When dealing with people, especially religiously. Now, another discussion which we're going to join up to this one is an interesting discussion. It's an interesting midrash. The midrash talks of this idea where a person should be completely altruistic when we relate to each other, when we relate to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where the pasuk says, the midrash says as follows. There's a pasuk in Mishlei which reads, "Kamayim apanim lepanim, kein lev adam leadam." Just as water I'll find the pasuk for you and see if I can quickly take a photo of it so you can see it. Let's just quickly call up Mishle. There we go. Okay. Coming up soon. Okay, got the pasuk. Send it to you. Right. Okay, so if you look at your phone, so you'll see that this is a pasuk from Mishlei, which says that kamayim apanim lapanim, just as a person looks into water and will see their reflection reflecting back at them, kain lev adam la adam. You see a true reflection when looking to water, and that's how ideally we should all behave toward each other. A situation where there is no two-facedness, and he's being created by this pasuk. A person should, what you see on the outside is what you feel on the inside. That's the idea behind the pasuk. So he has a wonderful insight by the Gaon of Vilna on a midrash, which makes a comment on this pasuk. The midrash has a comment asking the following question. Says the midrash, wine is a more chashuv liquid than water. And says the Midrash, we wonder out loud why Shlomo HaMelech used the metaphor of water and not wine when describing this idea. A strange kind of question, but the Midrash then answers that the reason why water was chosen to put over this message that two-facedness is something we shouldn't work with at all. Rather, a sense of integrity, what you feel is what is shown. That message cannot be telegraphed through wine, because in the word yain, in wine, there's an extra vav. There's an extra vav in the word. Now, this particular midrash challenged a lot of people as to how to interpret what the midrash was driving at. You know, what was, okay, you've got different liquids in the world that you can see your reflection in. So the same idea could have been utilized. Fine. There's white wine, that you can also see your reflection in. But this concept of the midrash saying that we can't use the concept of wine because of an extra vav really needs explanation. And so the Gaon basically used the system of milui, of expansion of letters, in order to answer or to drive home the message, uncover the dimensions of the message here. And so this is what the Gaon said. In all aspects of life, we have what we know as the revealed side, what you see, the nigle that is revealed, and then there's the nistar, that which you don't see. Looking at looking at the letters of the alphabet, this is really the concept of milui, looking at it from a philosophical point of view. When you talk about the ability to expand a letter into words and words into more letters, into more words, that concept is saying that there's a letter which everybody sees. The Aleph in its one letter form is considered nigle, revealed. And then when you expand it, okay, the word itself now becomes a word of three letters. The one contracted letter Aleph becomes Aleph Lamed Pei. And then Aleph Lamed Pei then goes even further to reveal, more covered aspects. So this milui concept is working with what you can see and then what is hidden from you. And there needs to be a congruency for this message to come across. So the Gaon says, okay, let's look at how the word for water in Hebrew is spelt. So we talk about mayim. Mayim. Now, if you write out mayim, you see the letter, the word in front of you. You've got mem yud mem. That spells the word mayim. So that is the word mayim in its most contracted, what we call the nigla, the revealed form of the word. Now, when you expand the letters in the word mayim, you've got a mem, you've got a yud, and you've got a mem. So if you write it out, if you write it out, you've got mem, yud, and a final mem. So if you're going to expand the mem, spell out the letter mem, and that is a mem, mem. It's like it sounds, two mems, mem, mem. That's how you write out the letter mem. Then yud is a yud followed by a vav and a dalet. That's a yud. And then you have once more mem, which is written, mem, mem. So that would be an expansion of the word. So if I just did this for you, again, I'm just sending you a picture. So there, I've just written on a piece of paper so that you can see it. Mem yud mem, that's mayim. And then you expect I expanded the letters where mayim is now expanded, where each letter is its conceptual word, mem mem. And then you've got yud, yud, vav, dalet, and then mem, mem again. Now, if we look at the way this expansion is actually what it's achieved, is that we've got what is we call revealed and what is hidden. So what's revealed is the one letter. So we can call that revealed. And what is on the other side of it is hidden, what they call in Hebrew nigleh and nistar. So again, I'm just showing it to you the way I've written it out here on a piece of paper, but it's just to emphasize and give you a bit more clarity when you see what I'm doing. I'm just playing with this concept of expanding the letters. So I've put a line in between what is revealed on the right-hand side and the second letter, which is hidden. I actually made a mistake there in the yud. The line should have been in front of the vav. Okay, so now let's have a look at what's interesting about the word mayim in its expanded form and why Shlomo HaMelech chose to use it as the most apt metaphor, describing how one person should relate to another without any two-facedness. And the method, the message of the idea of water, that it produces a pure reflection, is actually seen in this expanded approach to the letters. Because what's unique about water is that the word mayim has a situation where the revealed contracted letter is numerically equivalent, is completely congruent with the hidden letter. So a mem is the value of 40, and the second mem is also 40. So nigle equals nistar. What is revealed, what a person sees about another person, is exactly what's inside their hearts, which is what the pasuk said. Kamayim hapanim lepanim, kain leiv adam laadam. In the letter mem, what's revealed is the letter mem. You spell it out, the revealed and the hidden, the nigla and the nistar, are equal in numerical value. They both equal 40. When it comes to yud, the little yud equals 10. And then you've got 6 plus 4 in the vav and the dalad, which equals 10. And then the same thing is the mem and mem, where you've got, 40 and 40. So essentially what's happened here is that the actual word mayim is now understood why it's used, because what you've done here is you've uncovered the fact that the expansion creates an ability to see. I've just sent you again with the numbers. The expansion has created a situation where you can see now that the nigle equals the nistar. What a person projects on their persona or via their words, their facial expressions, is exactly equivalent to what they are on the inside. And the numbers, the numerical values of the expanded word mayim reflect exactly this. The word mayim reflects a complete, pure reflection of what is inside coming out on the outside. And says the Gaon, that's what lies behind Shlomo HaMelech's use of the word kemayim apanim lepanim, just as water produces a pure reflection, not just in the physical form, but conceptually in the word itself. Kein leiv adam laadam, that's how we have to learn, to behave. And that's using the expansion concept, to uncover a message in the word mayim. Now, the Midrash, says the Gaon, was trying to bring across this particular message. The Midrash came along and asked a question in order to highlight this issue. And the Midrash says, why can't we use Yayin? Yayin is spelled Yud, Yud, Nun. Yud, we showed you, can be expanded to Yud, Vav, and Dalet. And in the Yud, Vav, and Dalet expansion, you've basically got Nigle equals Nistar, because as you see in the Mayim case, the middle letter Yud, what is revealed equals numerically 10. And what's hidden is the Vav and the Dalet. The Vav and the Dalet, 6 and 4, equals 10. Yayin has got two Yuds, Yud, Yud, and those two letters, Yud and Yud, the Nigle equals the Nistar, which is perfect. But when you spell out Nun, when you expand the letter Nun, so you've got Nun, which is Nigle revealed, and what you have is, when you look at it expanded, you clearly see that what's interesting about the expansion of Nun is that what's extra about it is that it's vav in the actual word is now extra. So you see, I've just sent you another picture where I've taken the word yayin, and in the word yayin, I've expanded the yud, first yud. Yud is fine. Nigla equals nistar, the message is intact. Second yud would be the same thing. What's extra about nun is the extra vav. And that, says the Gaon, is what the Midrash was driving at. When the Midrash said that we can't use wine in the metaphor to describe pure integrity, no two-facedness, nigla equals nistar, the concept breaks down when using the word, the concept yayin, because of an extra vav, which is only seen to us when we expand the word yayin, and we start to uncover that the extra vav is lurking inside the expanded form of the of the letter nun, expanded to be the word nun, nun vav nun, and there is the extra vav. So it's quite a fascinating discovery and application of how you know, this code, if you will, actually can uncover deeper dimensions and explain concepts even deeper than we expressed, and as we see it, you know, in the actual pasuk. Now, quite possibly we can take this idea and work it back into the concept of the kior, with the kohanim coming to the Beit HaMikdash. The actual kior is designed from materials that are mirrors, and perhaps the mirror is there to drive home the same message. The water comes through, and the water and the mirrors really are meant to drive home, you know, the subliminal message to the Kohanim that the ego must be removed from all areas of Avodah, has to be done completely altruistically, as we say, Lishma. And the Nigla equals Nistar. What we are on the inside must reflect itself on the outside, and you know, allow the Avodah to continue, you know, without without any investment personally of the person. And this is kind of a suggestion as to how the water and the mirrors are such an apt set of props that the Kohanim encounter as they come into the Beit HaMikdash to begin the Avodah. So this is just one particular example, you know, as to how to apply this concept of milui, which you know, which we've used here to demonstrate a particular you know, an understanding of a midrash in a pasuk in Mishle, and we've applied it you know, to this concept of a kior in Parshat Vayakel. So this is again, I just thought of the example once we were discussing it, that was relative related well to our parsha from last week in Shul. So yeah, this is an example of a concept, you know, which I thought was just there's so many examples of this. It's quite phenomenal when you actually play with it, because it's sort of like it's just applied. The Arizal, you know, especially through the world of Kabbalah, would apply this to the name of Hashem. And he would take the letters of Hashem and Yud, Hey, followed by Vav and Hey, and expand it out, and then work with the numerical values of each of these permutations of the four letters. And you'd think there's only one way of doing it, but there's actually at least four different ways that he sort of expands each of the letters. You can spell hey, for example. You can spell hey and yud. You can spell hey and aleph. You can spell hey and hey. Those are, you know, that is like different permutations of how the letter hey and its sound can be expanded to include a second hidden letter. Vav, you can spell vav yud vav. You can spell vav, vav, aleph, vav. You can spell vav, double vav. So if you do this, these different equations, if you work with them, you have, so the Arizal bases many of his teachings on this concept of miluim, of various words. And this is his way of applying, you know, to the name of Hashem as well. So the most, let's call it the holiest name that represents Hashem's relationship with us, Yud-Hei followed by Vav-Hei, that name, which is in English called the Tetragrammaton, that using that expanded, you know, methodology, you have these different ways of expanding these different milui permutations of these four letters. And each of them have, you know, generates another numerical value. And he works with each of these values to demonstrate different ideas, in Hashem's relationship, with us. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting to take the opportunity to show you how it works. So, in the case of all the letters of the alphabet, you have this exact concept. You have the ability to expand it. So, in Aleph, we expanded it in such a way that it spells Aleph Lamed Pei. What was unique about Mayim was that the Nigla equals the Nistar, the contracted letter, numerically equals the same as the hidden, whereas that doesn't happen in Aleph. Aleph equals one. Lamed Pei is 30 plus 80. There's no congruency there. There's one in 110. So bet is bet yud tav. So you don't have congruency in the letters. So when it comes up, it's quite unique. That's what happens with yud and mem, which is which is why this example was so sharp in our usage of it. Okay, so that is really what I meant to just describe to you as we were dealing with the letter, the letters as such. Now, just wanted to quickly go back to discussing the actual shape of the letter Aleph that I discussed with you last time. I found something which also answered a problem that I was, trying to work it out exactly. So again, just appreciate more the nature of the letter Aleph. So one of the things that I was thinking about was mentioned that you find in various commentaries that the word Aleph is used in Tanakh as a concept to where the concept means a method of teaching or learning. We mentioned that the word ulpan, comes from that. Now, it's interesting that the word ulpan is an Aramaic word. And so we were discussing this point as to why we thought, it was used. This is really what I was looking for, a sort of a deeper understanding or more clear understanding, where the word Aleph, or the letter Aleph, should I say, is the start of all learning. It's the start of all true knowledge, the understanding of what Aleph represents, which is Hashem. So this is this is the noun. The noun of learning is derived in Aramaic, from the letter Aleph. All learning starts with the recognition of Aleph, of Hashem. Now the question was, of why the language Aramaic? How does Aramaic come into it? Uses the same letters as Hebrew, but it's not nearly on the same level of sanctity as what we call Lashon HaKodesh. So we're trying to understand exactly what's the message over here? Why would we use this? So I found a most fascinating sefer, which is it's a small little pamphlet, if you will, called Rosh Milin, which is a little sefer written by Rav Kook. And Rav Kook puts his mind to the message coming out of the letters of the alphabet, and in the message is a in his little sefer, like it's a little dinkum, it's a little sefer, a little pamphlet, and he has ideas, brief ideas on the alphabet. So Rav Kook actually explained something which I found fascinating. So he says like this. He says that says something like this. I'll try and be clear about it. He says, when we talk about acquiring knowledge, so there's the process by which a person learns something. The very concept of acquiring knowledge is, in a sense, secondary to the absolute nature of recognition of something. So in other words, here we're talking about Aleph representing Hashem. When we learn about Hashem, Hashem's role, Hashem's nature, if we will, Hashem's relationship with us, that process of learning implies that we don't know it. We have to learn it. What really should manifest is an absolute recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we had an absolute recognition, we wouldn't need to learn it. Learning means we're a stage below where we should be. We should know something, not have to learn it on an ideal level. So this is kind of what, when we say, Ani ma'amin be'emuna shleima, I believe with perfect faith. Belief, you know, is an interesting belief to know. I've got to move from a point called belief to actually know it 100%, where my belief becomes pure recognition. So therefore, the process of knowledge is secondary, is of a secondary nature to the concept of the absolute recognition of something. So learning implies we don't know an ideal world. The ability to know Hashem in a sense where there's absolute recognition, that was possible when Hashem created Adam and Chava. It was possible at Sinai, and it will only be possible again properly when Mashiach comes at the end of days. And so when the final redemption happens, then Mala Haaretz Daya Et Hashem, the world will be full of the knowledge of God. It's kind of like an intuitive recognition that you don't even have to teach. It becomes so embedded as an obvious fact. And therefore, the process of learning is eliminated in other words, at least recognizing Hashem is eliminated or not necessary when pure recognition is in play. So Rav Kook suggests that this is why the letter of the alphabet, Aleph, and the word Ulpan, which is coming from the root word Aleph, is, you know, comes from Aramaic, because the very concept of seeking knowledge is by nature a secondary translated concept. Like the letter is translated into an Hebrew word, an Aramaic word, that represents a whole process of learning exactly what's happened over here. So the word Ulpan in Aramaic is cognate to the Hebrew word limud, learning. The neshama knows that anything which is acquired through learning is not original. You know, but first-hand understanding of Hashem is only the inner understanding which cannot be articulated. Now, that will only become the heritage of the world on that great day at the end of days, when it won't be necessary to actually teach everybody about the concept, but it will be experienced in that regard. So this is what Rav Kook suggests behind the use of translations from Hebrew into Aramaic in general. And he applies it here to this, the actual letter Aleph and the word that Aleph now represents. That was one insight I was fascinated by. The second one is bringing into focus a well-known idea. We've discussed it a couple of times over the years, but yeah, we'll just point out how Rav Kook suggests we look at it. So Rav Kook asks us, as many thinkers do, to look at the word Aleph and focus on another meaning, that the word Aleph or the letters of the word Aleph, as it, you know, telegraphs a concept here. The word Aleph, which refers to the number 1,000, is also an obvious derivative of Aleph Lamed Pei. Now, the unit 1,000 has four digits. We arrive at the number 1,000 in four different stages. We start off from single digits, we move to doubles, we go to triple digits, and then quadruple digits. So Rav Kook suggests that in Kabbalistic literature, what you will find is that the concept of creation is a four-stage process, as if you're going from single digits to double to triple digits to quadruple digits. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins to create the world, there's a four-stage step-down process. And that four-stage process is well known in the world of Kabbalah, and that has different expressions too. And in previous discussions, going back to when we were dealing with certain philosophical approaches, we used the acronym ABIA. ABIA is where the Aleph stands for Atzilut, Bet stands for Briya, creation from nothing. Then there's Yetzirah, that's the Yud. Yetzirah is fashioning something from some other form. And then Asiyah with an Ayin. So Aleph, Bet, Yud, Ayin, Abiyah. That is the four-stage process of how, from one angle, the world of Kabbalah sees a four-stage creation process. There's when it comes to the alphabet, there are four distinct features within the nature of the Aleph base as well. And Rav Kook says it like this. Rav Kook says that music, the concept of sophisticated sound, melodies, is the highest level of an expression of sound. Then follows the ability to give the sound shape, which are vowels. The third level are the crowns attached to the letter that we call tagim. And then finally, the fourth level is the actual Hebrew letter in the alphabet itself, the letters themselves. So you've got the trop, the notes, how to sing the word in the Torah on each letter, the note on each letter or word, the melodies. Then you've got the vowels, then you've got the crowns, and then you've got the actual letter itself. So that's the for myself, I sort of created an acronym, using the Afrikaans word tante, like, so you got tamim, you've got the nikud, the nun, that's the vowels. You've got the tagim, and then you've got the actual otiyot, the aleph, the letter. That's in my head, I've just got this word tanta sitting in my head so that I remember, what it is. Now, this four-stage process of creation, you start to see it in many aspects. You start to see when a child is born, it also goes through these four stages. It first makes unarticulated noises, and then only as it matures and develops, it's able to pronounce the vowels. And only after the child masters speech can it then actually use the letters to form words. So although it would seem appropriate that that Aleph represented by a single digit, but it's actually only the beginning of a four-stage process, represented by the four-digit number, 1,000. And this, says Rav Kook, is the meaning of the letter Aleph, which has the same letters as the Hebrew word, for 1,000. That's his second, offering here in terms of giving us an appreciation. So we've got to do this with all the letters of the alphabet, to get a real understanding of what it's trying to teach us. Again, it was well known. I'd seen it in many Svarim. We all grew up with this idea that The letter Aleph was made out of three letters, the Yud on the top, the Yud at the bottom, and the Vav in Hebrew is a hook, the letter Vav at a diagonal, creating a connection between the two worlds. The Yud at the top, right top corner, was considered the spiritual world. The physical world is our world, the Yud at the bottom, and the Vav connecting the two worlds together as a vital component of our existence. So it's interesting that Rav Kook had some more insights into this, which I'd also never seen before. So he essentially asked the question as to why the shape of the letter Aleph has the two yuds attached to the Vav, but they're attached to the Vav at different points on the Vav. So the letter Aleph hits the one side, and then, where the attachment to the top letter Yud attaches itself to the Vav, slightly lower, than the actual, than the at least in the from the on the diagonal, compared to the Yud at the bottom. So he basically says as follows, that the asymmetry of the Aleph can be understood by that understanding that the essence and existence cannot meet directly without the transformation of the Vav. In other words, it's impossible for the spiritual world and this physical world, to exist without a downward slope, if you will, where there's a flow of energy from that moves towards the right as it comes downward. So even it teaches us that even though the material world is supposed to represent the spiritual essential world, the representation is diffracted by actual existence, and that is represented by the two yuds that meet the vav, but not at the same point. So it's fascinating how he took time to think the shape of the letter through, which I hadn't seen before. And he then makes one last point, which we'll leave that for today. And then he says that the nature of the Aleph base is made up of course shapes of letters, but the shape of the letter has thick lines and thin lines, and they're a combination of these. So if you're looking at that letter Aleph, you've got the Yud, Yud, and Vav are very thick lines, but the end of the letters of the Yud that join their lines to the Aleph, the two Yuds that touch the slanted Vav of the Aleph, are held together by only the slightest delicate line. And Rav Kook suggests an explanation, to this as such. He's talking, what he sees in it, that kind of like this this connection, it's such a fragile connection that exists, which represents Hashem trying to somehow create a line of connection between the spiritual world and the physical world. And it's that little line is sufficient, because of its exuberant vitality, to fill all life with an abundance of existence. And from the lower side of the diagonal, only the most refined and pure essence, can connect to the, to the actual spirituality itself. So all of this comes together in the creation of this Aleph representing Hashem, and the creation of the world through the four-stage process that that the letter represents. Anyway, so this is kind of the insights that I found in the particular Sefer. And I know there are a couple of others, but I'll just as we go on, I'll try and see if I can understand them to be able to then relay them over. Anyway, so we, just in summation, what we've seen here is that we started our whole discussion through this Gemara and Midrash that tells us that the letters of the alphabet were used, number one, as the building blocks of creation. Bezalel was able to use the messages in the letters to understand how to represent architecturally in the Mishkan the relationship between Hashem and our world. And from there, we decided to just take a detour a little and to see what insights exist in each of the letters of the alphabet and the approaches that the Torah has with the use of these alphabets. One of those, besides understanding the words that come out of the actual letters, we have the milui concept, which forces us to spell and expand the letters, showing that each letter is not just a contracted graphic representation of one letter, but rather each letter actually has a concept intertwined in it. It's brought out by expanding the single letter into a word. In the case of Aleph, it was Aleph, Lamed, Pei. And then each of those letters, each of those three letters making up the word, can be expanded further and further to reveal more and more hidden dimensions in our understanding of how Hashem wants us to live and his connection to us in our world as well. So the uniting of the physical with spiritual worlds is such a major theme in the world of Kabbalah and Jewish thought. And Rav Kook sees the tenuous nature of it through the letter Aleph itself, as it as the light of Hashem comes down to our world. So we'll continue next week. We'll continue next week discussing this idea, and we move on hopefully to the letter Bet and see what I can come up with by reading these for him. All right, wishing you a Shavua Tov, and we'll be in touch regarding our shiur next week. Okay, called serve, wishing you well.